Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening to all of my listeners. This is Anita Stewart with the Wise Women Media Radio Show. And we're doing a little special tonight since I don't have a guest. We're going to be replaying some very significant interviews that have taken place over the past week in regards to the two-year commemoration of the Gulf Oil Gusher. We have some special music also to play for you. We're going to open up with a song, actually an acoustical masterpiece by John Butler. The name of the song is Ocean. And remember, as you're listening to this, this is just one man and one guitar.
Launching out the good spirit out there, you know what I'm saying? Spread it all over the world. You know, we got this focus, launch rack, this huge satellite dish out to the world. I was wondering if you'd join me in a prayer, a simple prayer. It doesn't matter what race, color, creed you are. It's just a little simple universal one. Just a peace, love, and unity on this planet, in this day and age that we live in. So if you join me on this next episode, I hope you go somewhere good. Send out some love off this big launch ramp to the world, because it definitely will happen.
Thank you.
That was a performance of Ocean by John Butler live at Red Rocks. That concert, particular concert, took place last July. A mystical, magical acoustic song and really, truly a masterpiece. The next video I was going to play, it's going to be the audio of the program Inside Story Americas, which was broadcast on Al Jazeera English. It was a panel speaking about the Gulf oil gusher and the aftermath. The people that were included on that panel were the esteemed journalist Dar Jamal, who has spent a lot of time in the Gulf region, Dr. Ricky Ott, a marine toxicologist and an Exxon Valdez survivor and an expert in oil toxicity, and prior Louisiana elected official J. Bennett Johnston, who now works as an oil lobbyist. So I'm going to start that audio now. I did want to let you all know I am having some technical difficulties, and I was not able to install the chat. So if you have any direct questions or comments, please feel free to email me while this show is going on at Anita Stewart, A-N-I-T-A-S-T-E-W-A-R-T, @gmail.com, and I'll try to answer them as we proceed through the show here. One moment on this audio.
Shrimp without eyes, crabs without claws, and a fishing industry in decline. 2 years after the massive Gulf of Mexico oil spill, scientists and fishermen tell Al Jazeera the impact is becoming clearer and things are getting worse. You're watching Inside Story Americas from Washington. Shihab Ratansi. 2 years ago, BP's Deepwater Horizon oil rig exploded, killing 11 and releasing millions of barrels of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Then, in an attempt to break up the oil, BP poured nearly 2 million gallons of dispersant. Now, Al Jazeera has returned to the region to investigate the impact of the worst man-made environmental disaster in U.S. history. Gulf oil drillers are having their busiest year since 2010. But fishermen told us their businesses are still suffering. Their fisheries are collapsing amidst a significant decline in shrimp and oysters. And scientists have told Al Jazeera they're seeing a disturbing amount of mutated sea life. However, in a statement to us, BP says, quote, every seafood sample from reopened waters has undergone rigorous testing for oil and dispersants, and every sample from reopened waters has passed those tests. Al Jazeera's Dar Jamal has been in the region speaking to people in the fishing industry, scientists, and residents. Here's his report.
Every week for the last 2 years, environmentalists have gone out looking for oil. The rich ecosystem of Louisiana's marshlands have been damaged and are struggling to recover.
So I'm going to scoop my hand in there and smell it. And it does have this smell of petroleum.
After the deadly explosion at BP's Macondo well, 4.9 million barrels of light sweet crude flowed into the Gulf of Mexico and onto the U.S. coastline. This is a black-gilled lobster. This isn't a species. This is contamination. Dr. Daryl Felder is studying abnormalities in sea life, and he's finding plenty.
You want healthy males and females reproducing in order to put larvae back into the water column.
Just one or two contaminated species can affect the entire food chain. Despite the relevant U.S. government agencies saying seafood is safe to eat, some scientists say that isn't the only concern people should have. Killifish are one of the most important animals in the food chain of the Louisiana marshlands.
I can't think of a worse animal to knock out of the food chain than a killifish. They've got lower heart rate, they've got lower hatching success, and their hearts aren't forming properly, which, as you might imagine, might be kind of bad news for an animal when it grows up.
Whitehead blames the animal contamination on oil in the marshlands, and that's exactly what Gulf environmental activists are finding.
We have some evidence of deformed shrimp, which is another developmental impact. So that shrimp's grandmother was exposed to oil while the mother was developing, but it's the grandchild of the shrimp that was exposed grows up with no eyes.
For the Gulf Coast's many fishermen, the spill has had a dramatic effect. Just 30 sacks of oysters when the catch should normally be 1,000. And it's been like this since the disaster. That's 2 years Brad Robin has been facing economic ruin.
I mean, the truth of the matter is, it's not there to catch. We can't catch it. It's terrible. It's you know, disaster's an understatement for what they have done.
Half of all oysters sold in the U.S. used to come from Louisiana's waters. Fishermen now supply just 1/5.
They destroyed my industry. They destroyed my livelihood. They destroyed my business. And they also destroyed the way we did life.
BP has had to put up billions of dollars to deal with financial claims. The company is paying to monitor seafood, which it maintains is safe.
Seafood from the Gulf of Mexico is amongst the most tested in the world, and according to the FDA and NOAA, it's as safe now as it was before the accident.
Experimentally weathered oil.
But Whitehead's conclusions tell a different story.
What we can say is species that share a similar habitat to our animal are at similar risk, the same kinds of exposures to the toxic components of oil. And the toxic components of oil exert the same biological effects, whether you're talking about a mouse or a fish or a bird.
After the Exxon Valdez oil disaster in Alaska in 1989, it took 4 years for the full impacts of the spill to be known. Here, in the Gulf of Mexico, 2 years on, the impacts are already clear. Dar Jamail, Al Jazeera, New Orleans.
How extensive is the damage from the BP oil spill? To discuss this, we're joined from Doha by Al Jazeera's Dar Jamail. In the studio, we have Ricky Ott. She's a marine toxicologist and author of 2 books on the Exxon Valdez oil spill. She went to the Gulf after the BP spill and lived there for a year. And we also have J. Bennett Johnson. He's a former U.S. senator from the state of Louisiana and is currently an oil industry lobbyist. Dar Jamail, I mean, there seems to be an accepted narrative that's grown up that there still may be problems. By and large, things are getting better. In some ways, it was exemplified by an editorial in the New York Times, which said, in part, thanks partly to nature's resilience, some progress has been made. The Gulf is open to fishing, beaches are mostly clean, and President Obama has resurrected an ambitious oil exploration plan that he shelved immediately after the spill. Dr. Mel, I mean, is that our starting point, that things are on the upswing, even though there still remain some problems?
Well, it's probably best that that was written in an op-ed because it flies in the face of an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence. Talking first about where did the oil go, there's a lot of rhetoric that it was eaten up by microbes and this kind of thing. University of South Florida has published studies showing that estimates between 75 and 90% of the oil actually remains in deep-sea plumes as a result of the dispersants that were sprayed from atop as well as injected down at the wellhead while it was gushing. And then there's Dr. Samantha Joy from University of Georgia, who's done remote-operated vehicles as well as gone down in an Alvin deep-sea submarine to around the Macondo area and other areas of the Gulf and produced scientific evidence showing basically large swaths of the seafloor that have been wiped out by oil as well as sea life that's been impacted. And then, of course, we can go into the seafood industry and talking about the oil and the oyster industry in Louisiana that is basically on its knees at this point. One of the oyster men there who's actually on the state of Louisiana Oyster Task Force, Brad Robin is his name, just told me the other week that when I was down there that his industry in his part of Louisiana is down roughly 90%. We have a shrimp industry, according to Clint Guidry, the president of the Louisiana Shrimpers Association, is down between 50 and 85%, depending on what kind of shrimp you're talking about and what areas. So there's a lot of evidence on the ground from both the fishing industry and science that is really showing that, no, this is far from over.
Well, we'll go into some of those details in a moment. And yet, though, J. Bennett Johnson, we're being bombarded almost on a daily basis by adverts like this one. Here's a portion of an advert from BP. We did ask BP, by the way, to come onto the program, but they refused. But here's a sort of advert that we're seeing from BP saying things are getting better.
When BP made a commitment to the Gulf, we knew it would take time, but we were determined to see it through. Today, while our work continues, I want to update you on the progress. BP has set aside $20 billion to fund economic and environmental recovery. We're paying for all spill-related cleanup costs, and we've established a $500 million fund so independent scientists can study the Gulf's wildlife and environment for 10 years. Thousands of environmental samples from across the Gulf have been analyzed by independent labs under the direction of the U.S. Coast Guard.
David Johnson there, even there, testing is still underway, but the point is that the overall rosy picture seems to fly in the face of the evidence that we've been collecting.
Well, first of all, let me say, I'm not here to defend BP and what I believe was real negligence on their part. I think there's no doubt about that. But I'm happy to say that Dar is completely wrong in his findings. You can't come to Louisiana and meet with a few people and select, cherry-pick one or two and get it the truth. First of all, on oysters, it is true that oysters are down. The reason the oysters are down is they open the spillway and let the fresh water come in. Oysters depend on a degree of salinity, and that is what has done in the oysters. It was intentional in order to flush out the Gulf. That will come back in time every time we have a big flood in the Mississippi River and we open up the spillways. That happens, and it's not due at all to pollution. Now, with respect to oysters, with respect to seafood, the fact of the matter is that we're having the best year on shrimp in 5 years. In 5 years, if you'd like to see the figures, I downloaded them today from the Internet. They're there.
Right.
The same thing is true with
the geographical reach of those figures, though. Is that for the entire Gulf or for the area?
I've got Louisiana, and I've also got this is Louisiana. Yeah, it is Louisiana, and it's the best.
All right. Well, let's get Dar, your cherry picking figures. What's your response?
Do you dispute this?
Well, I would first start by saying I've been on this story since the disaster began, and I've been talking with fishermen, scientists up and down the Gulf Coast in Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida, all four states that were directly impacted. And, for example,
we'll let Dar answer, yes.
Okay. Let me finish, please. Clint Guidry, president of the Louisiana Shrimpers Association, he represents over 600 shrimpers, and he is the person that says, look, if we're talking about white and brown shrimp, depending on what area of Louisiana we're talking about and which particular shrimp species, they're down between 50 and 85% over the last year. Because I know the figures you're talking about, BP is quoting the same ones, and they include the entirety of the Gulf of Mexico, including the parts of Florida that were not impacted by the spill, as well as Texas, which was basically not impacted at all. And there's a lot of scientific evidence showing, and I can cite several studies on this, that the shrimp that were impacted in the areas that were hit by the oil and dispersant, a lot of them died immediately, many of them died later, and then a large number of them actually did leave the area along with other marine life. So we had a huge decline in catches in the immediate worst impacted areas while a surplus harvest in areas outside of those areas, and that's why the overall figures for the Gulf of Mexico are very quotable, showing that, oh, no, maybe this wasn't so bad. But if we look at the areas specifically impacted by the oil and dispersants, we see a very, very different story, and that's coming from fishermen and scientists from Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and the far western panhandle.
I'd like to jump in here and add that, I've been dealing with this sort of polarization of stories for 23 years now, if we go all the way back to the Exxon Valdez, and Exxon has never claimed there was a problem with fisheries from the beginning. It's always record harvest, and when the population of pink salmon and herring collapsed 4 years later, it was too late. It wasn't our fault. And I can pick apart statistics. What the industry typically does is exactly what Dar has alluded to. If there's a problem in a very localized area, they will spread out to a much larger area. I've heard from fishermen in Florida just yesterday saying that the stone crab catch, for example, is non-existent in the northern part of western Florida, and it seems like the stone crabs have migrated down into the south. So, yes, there's still a good...
All right, well, then there's also this issue of the mutations that are being witnessed and that we saw in Dahl's report.
Exactly.
We did actually get a comment from BP on that topic in particular. Their argument is, quote, diseases like fish lesions are common and are generally caused by bacterial infections or parasites. Experts have recently linked red sores found on some gulf fish species, including whiting and black drum, to small parasites known as sea lice, which are common in gulf waters. The BP statement goes on to say, prior to the Deepwater Horizon accident, there was documentation of lesions on fish in the Gulf of Mexico caused by parasites and other agents. As part of the natural resource damage assessment, which is led by state and federal trustees, we're investigating the extent of injury to natural resources due to the accident. BP also said the company is funding multiple lines of scientific investigation to evaluate potential damage to fish, and these include extensive seafood testing programs by the Gulf states, fish population monitoring conducted by the Louisiana Department of Wildlife, Fisheries, Auburn University and others, habitat and water quality monitoring by NOAA, and toxicity tests on regional species. BP went on to say, well, we'll read the whole statement out, just to be fair, to say that the state and federal trustees will complete an injury assessment and the need for environmental restoration will be determined. Okay, so BP seems to be acknowledging there that testing needs to be done, and there is, you know, that time frame that you're alluding to, you know, we simply just don't know a lot of the effects. But they're also saying, look, there are parasites in the water anyway. There have always been parasites.
Like
this has nothing to do with oil.
Because
yeah.
After a toxic incident with, like, the BP disaster, plus all the dispersants that were intentionally sprayed, it makes up this toxic stew that there wipes out the more sensitive species and allows for what's called opportunistic species to flourish. And until that balance is restored, I think we're going to be getting things like these sea lice and whatever that are increasing in numbers, and the microbes. The microbes that allegedly eat the oil, they also don't stop with oil. The carapaces of crabs, for example, have an oil coating around them. Our skin is oil-based. And I think that what we're seeing here is a disturbed ecosystem that, if you track it back, does link to this ghastly amount of chemical poison and oil that was dumped into the Gulf.
May I just make one point? The statistics I quote are for Louisiana. I show them to you. They downloaded this morning. We've got Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, and you can see that the catch in Louisiana is the best it's been in 5 years. Now, this is Department of Wildlife and Fisheries in Louisiana. It's not BP figures.
But what that's not showing is that how many of those fish and shrimp have lesions on them. Apparently what's happening is about 40 to 50% of the catch now are born without eyes. They're born with horrific lesions. And prior to the BP disaster, the incidence of these lesions was 0.1%. So there is a disturbed ecosystem. What I look to is what I call the apex predator, the dolphins. And as long as something is obviously wrong with dolphin babies dying at unusually high numbers, there is something wrong with the entire ecosystem.
Dr. Ray, what about this argument, though, that there is testing underway by the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, local authorities in Louisiana, and indeed the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, who we've mentioned a couple of times so far? Surely if there was something really wrong, we'd know about it by now.
Well, I'd like to jump in on that. There is, as you said, a lot of testing going on. One of the problems I ran into trying to get responses from FDA and EPA, the obvious agencies that would be responsible for these things, was that they said, well, we can't answer. We insist that you talk to NOAA. But NOAA couldn't talk to the media because of their involvement in the NERDA of collecting evidence while, you know, the possibility of a very real possibility of a trial against BP would go to court. So they're not allowed. So a lot of this is basically under wraps for right now. But what's interesting is less than 3 weeks ago, NOAA, because of a really huge event of dolphin mortality in Barataria Bay, Louisiana, one of the worst impacted areas by the spill, they went ahead and stepped outside of that silence and were allowed to announce that there's a huge dolphin mortality that's happening, and they directly link the problems to chemicals from BP's oil and dispersants, and they did so in order to alert other groups involved who could come in and try to help what was left of the dolphin population in that area. So while there has been a big information clampdown on what are the results of these ongoing studies, can we see some of them, despite that, NOAA found it necessary, because things were so bad in Barataria, Louisiana, to go ahead and release to the media that literally this is the first time that I know of a federal agency involved in these studies has released evidence directly linking massive impacts on marine life to this oil disaster.
That is not correct. What NOAA has said is that there was damage to the dolphins before the spill. There's damage after the spill, and they think there might be a connection between the spill and the dolphins, but it has not been established at all. And by the way, I'd like for you to look at these statistics. These are Louisiana Wildlife and Fisheries statistics. I mean, how you can say...
I'd actually like to shift away from statistics.
Right. Of course you would.
Because this is an emerging story right now, and this is what we saw in Alaska, was that when you have sick animals and sick ecosystems, and you have sick people, and they're sick because of the same reason.
Right. You accept that these statistics, wherever they came from, they didn't specify how diseased the fishery is called, the fish were called.
But NOAA has said that they're as safe as they have ever been. It's just not true.
NOAA's not commenting, actually, right now, because of the potential for legal proceedings. That's part of the problem, isn't it?
Is that six federal agencies have maintained since day one of this spill that there has been no problem with the air quality, no problem with the water quality, and no problem with the seafood, and that dispersant spraying was stopped, and they use that as part of their justification.
So, John, again, we're going to run out of time if we don't move on a little bit. I mean, what about the effect on humans, both those
exactly.
involved in the cleanup, those living in these areas, and those actually consuming the seafood? How do we have any studies about that?
What's happened is the anecdotal evidence is overwhelming and has triggered studies. So you don't just start with a study. You start with an observation in the natural world that something is wrong. And that's what happened the first year that I was in the Gulf for an entire year and witnessed the decline in human health, respiratory problems, central nervous system problems, headaches, dizziness, nausea, exact hallmark characteristics of oil spill exposure that have been documented and reported in journals like the International Journal of Occupational and Environmental Health, exact same symptoms. So that anecdotal evidence is what then has triggered the studies, like, for example, the National Institute of Health is launching a massive study on people. And there are several independent studies started as well to answer the question of what exactly did happen to the workers and the coastal population. Because of the unique hydraulics in the Gulf, the air mass, the surface of the sea is literally sucked up pretty much daily up into the clouds and then either dissipated or blown ashore as sea breezes, come down as rain. People have measured oil and dispersant in their swimming pools, on their door stoops. People were in their blood.
I think what's slightly perplexing then is, I mean, even if you don't accept many of these findings or one can find numbers perhaps to back an alternative narrative, it's about where the burden of proof should lie in all of this. Given, though, that there is this overwhelming evidence, both anecdotal and scientific and peer-reviewed, shouldn't we then be proceeding with
anecdotal evidence, peer-reviewed evidence of what?
Of pollution, of mutations, of exposure to CO2. Well, I think they've just cited several scientific studies from universities and local organizations. At the very least, again, you may not realize it, or we may not accept those studies, but at the very least, though, shouldn't we be proceeding with caution instead of beginning with this idea that we should just carry on full speed ahead?
No,
things are getting
course,
better, and we should be drilling more and so forth.
No, there was damage in the Gulf, no question. The extent of the damage is not known and will not be known for years.
But is the oil industry banking on that?
No, the oil industry, look, is the first to be concerned about damage to the Gulf because they're the ones who are going to have to pay for it.
I mean, Exxon Valdez is a great example there, actually. Did they really have to pay for it?
Exxon Valdez ended up paying 10 cents on the dollar. And what we're seeing now is an interesting development with the BP plaintiff settlement, and that after denying human health effects for 2 years, both the federal government and BP, suddenly there is billions, literally billions of dollars on the table to pay for health issues, to pay for medical monitoring for 21 years, to pay 21 years
right.
to pay for community health clinics with specialists in chemical illness training.
Is that a bad thing? I find
all this miraculous after for 2 years denying that there's been any health problems whatsoever. It's all heat stroke and
But is there an acceptance of culpability, though?
There is absolutely no acceptance of culpability. And the evidence is mounting across the United States. It's not just BP. It's the entire oil industry that is downplaying the health impacts, the polluted well water with the fracking, the tar sands spills, the seizures and stuff that's going on.
The earthquakes and then fracking.
The earthquake, the tap water that you can actually light on fire. And people
are starting do you understand why there might be some suspicion? I mean, you yourself, you know, former Louisiana senator, now an oil industry lobbyist, this revolving door doesn't perhaps help people's perceptions of an industry that is, and need an administration and a government that is acting with the best interest of public health and the environment at heart. Can you at least see why there might be some suspicion?
Oh, I know there's great suspicion. There has not been all these denials. Look, BP is, and I don't defend BP on everything they've done, but they've paid
out. But it's actually standard oil industry practice, I think, is under the microscope right now, perhaps. Let 21 years carry on. Let the time unfold.
Stop using petroleum?
So is that it then? So basically the economic use of the need for oil has to trump public safety and environmental concerns in the end? We have no choice.
Well, what is your choice?
My answer, actually, is that what we learned from after Exxon Valdez is that all jobs are not created equal. And increasingly, people in the Gulf and across America are finding that as their community has become an oil sacrifice zone, or a pending one slated to be sacrificed, like with the Keystone XL pipeline corridor. People are rising up and saying, you know, this just isn't working for us. And people are coming together in communities, asserting local democratic control and self-governance, and starting to say that our needs for health and clean environment actually trump the oil industry's needs to make money. We want to encourage jobs that it also sustain community well-being and our health.
Dr. Ott, we'll leave it there, but don't worry, we are going to continue looking at this topic in our next edition. But for the moment, Dr. Ricky Ott, Dar Jamail, and Jay Bennett-Johnson, thank you all very much. That's all for this episode from Washington, D.C., but on our next show, we will take a closer look at the impact of the oil spill on U.S. government regulation and energy policies. And you can find much more of Dar's interviews with scientists and residents in the region on our website at aljazeera.com.
That was the latest Al Jazeera English report. The show is called Inside Story Americas. You can find that at Al Jazeera English. You can also find that video on my blog, whodood.blogspot.com. That's whodood.blogspot.com. That story was done just a couple of days ago and aired on the Al Jazeera channel. We also want to play another audio for a video, and this was from the latest expose by the investigative journalist Greg Palast, who wrote a two-part story on echowatch.org about the BP blowout cover-up. The description of the story is EchoWatch reveals shocking information of a BP cover-up of a blowout prior to the deadly Deepwater Horizon explosion in the Gulf. Special report from the Caspian Sea for EchoWatch.org by investigative reporter Greg Palast. Stand by.
The Deepwater Horizon explodes. On BP's offshore oil platform, 11 men die, and over 1,000 miles of Gulf coastline are destroyed by oil. BP's CEO apologized, calling it an accident.
The Gulf spill is a tragedy that never should have happened. I'm Tony Haywood. BP has taken full responsibility for cleaning up the spill in the Gulf.
But was the deadly Deepwater Horizon explosion just an accidental tragedy, or something far worse, a deadly cover-up? This is Greg Palast, reporting from the Gulf of Mexico. The possible answer came within days of the explosion. I received a message from a terrified witness who said it was too dangerous to use official email. The witness, extraordinarily, was on a ship floating in the middle of the Caspian Sea. When I got to a secure phone line, what I heard was a shocking accusation. The Deepwater Horizon was not BP's first big offshore platform blowout.
BP very nearly had a blowout on the Central Azeri platform in the Caspian Sea last year. The platform was engulfed in a gas cloud, and all 140 plus personnel had to take the lifeboats and abandon the platform. It was mayhem.
If the tip is for real, then BP concealed information that could have saved the lives of the 11 men in the Gulf. Get the evidence. Our crew flew from New York to Central Asia, then to Baku, Azerbaijan, on the shoreline of the Caspian Sea's giant oil field.
Something happened at BP's big offshore platform, and we want to find out what it is.
In the back alleyways of the ancient Silk Road city of Baku, we searched for witnesses to the 2008 blowout. Then, among the polluted ruins of the oil fields, we found two rig workers who said that, yes, a BP rig's cement blew out, and they fled for their lives from the gas-filled oil rig. But before we could get the witnesses on camera, we were arrested, which we caught on our hidden cameras. One policeman told us proudly in his area BP drives this country. Our British crew was released, but our witnesses were disappeared. The witnesses vanished, but new evidence appeared. These cables released by WikiLeaks quote a secret meeting between the U.S. Embassy and the president of BP Azerbaijan, in which the oil company man admits there was a disastrous blowout of a Caspian injection well on the Central Azeri platform. It was the largest such evacuation in BP history. Given the explosive potential, BP was quite fortunate to prevent a gas ignition. BP's secret statement to the embassy is quite different to the testimony given by BP to the U.S. Congress just 6 months prior to the Deepwater Horizon explosion, when lobbying for the right to drill in the Gulf.
I think we also need to remember that OCS development has been going on for the last 50 years, and it has been going on in a way that is both safe and protective of the environment.
But the BP executive left out of his testimony the blowout that occurred just 1 year earlier. The drilling cement failed in the Caspian, just as it failed on the Deepwater Horizon. BP has given several different versions of the reason the Caspian Sea platform was abandoned, always blaming Mother Nature, leaks in the seafloor, but never a blowout.
Buried deep in a government report, in a file cabinet, they said the gas came up from below the rig. In other words, a leak, a blowout.
When we asked BP whether they had concealed a blowout from the U.S. Congress and regulators, BP responded in writing that they only told the Azerbaijan government and BP's partners, which included Chevron and Exxon. Robert F. Kennedy, Jr., president of Waterkeeper Alliance and senior attorney for Natural Resources Defense Council.
The entire government is basing its policy in the Gulf of Mexico on the assurances of this company that this can be done safely and it's never failed before. This is what they were telling everybody. And yet, the whole time, they knew that this was a process that had failed disastrously in the Caspian Sea. And we have laws that make it illegal to hide this kind of stuff. You know, and everybody knows that what they're doing in the Gulf is dangerous.
Today, BP says everything on the Gulf Coast is just fine.
All beaches and waters are open for everyone to enjoy.
But not everyone is enjoying the beach.
They've done about 500 yards in a month, and they only have the rest of this beach and another 600 miles to go.
Today, miles of Gulf Coast shoreline are still oil. Is this due to an accident or a cover-up? This is Greg Palast reporting for EcoWatch.org.
So I want to encourage everybody to go to the website ecowatch.org and read the two-part story by Greg Palast to get more information about what exactly happened in the Caspian Sea, what he uncovered, and how it relates to what happened in the Gulf of Mexico. There's a much deeper story here, and we're just getting the tip of the iceberg, I believe. We want to close the show tonight with another song by John Butler, joined by his band, John Butler Trio. But I did want to say thank you to our sponsors, Roundtree 7, Here Be Monsters, Daughters of Isis, the Hoodoo Blog. We also want to send out thanks to Ms. Amani and Dr. John and Turtle Woman Rising and Soulfire for the Gulf. They did their mojo last week. We united under that whole vibe, and Florida got some rain pretty much all weekend, so whatever they did out there, it worked. So I'll start John Butler Trio, and see us here next Monday, 8 o'clock, on the Wise Women Media Radio Show. I apologize for not having a chat tonight, and the chat just was not working. If you have any questions about this show, or you need me to list the links or send the links to you, just leave a message at wisewomenmedia.posterous, posterous.com, and I will get back to you, or you can email me at anitastewart@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy this song. This is the John Butler Trio. The song is titled Revolution.
Don't you want to?